The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 48. Denver is home to the U.S.'s largest brewery, largest beer festival, and largest brew pub, and every day there's over 100 different beers being brewed within the city limits. I'll drink to that. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. Picture a tourist in your head, and what comes to mind? Fanny pack, socks with sandals, pasty skin. Okay, maybe that's just German tourists. But almost every traveler out there does have one thing in common, and that's that they carry a camera with them. Whether it's a fancy DSLR camera with five lenses or just a smartphone, everyone, when they travel, likes to snap pictures. And I'm constantly getting emails from people asking me how they can improve their travel photography. And to be honest, I'm not the best person to ask, especially since most of the beautiful pictures on my site are courtesy of my wife, Heather. But today, I brought on someone who is the right person to ask. Michael Neffler is an incredible photographer and also an avid traveler, and he's come up with 8 tips to help anyone take better travel photos. He'll also touch on what things you should consider when buying a camera, and since he's well-traveled, tell us about some of the times he's been able to sneak in to some pretty cool places. Don't forget, we're attempting to catch Tim Ferriss's podcast on iTunes, so if you like what we do here on the podcast, I'd love if you left a review on iTunes. If you're unsure how to do that, because iTunes does make it a little difficult, we've even made a brief video tutorial on how to leave an iTunes review. You could see that tutorial by heading to extrapackofpeanuts.com/pods, P-O-D-S. Here we go, on to the interview. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creative Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a man who's photographed around the globe, from the beaches of Croatia to the tops of the Himalayas, and shot bands like Pearl Jam, Jay-Z, and Bruce Springsteen. Freelance photographer extraordinaire Michael Neffler from MichaelNefflerPhotography.com. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show, and welcome.
Hey, Trav, good to be here. I'm a big fan of your website, the podcast, everything. Yeah, I'm stoked.
Awesome. And Mike, in just a bit, we're going to get into the nitty gritty of photography. You're going to give people your 8 tips to become a better photographer, better travel photographer. But first, I'd love if you could share how you became a freelance photographer, because that's the type of job that as a kid, a lot of people say, hey, that'd be really cool. I want to go around the world and shoot travel photography and shoot sports photography and music photography. How did it come about for you?
Well, it was kind of serendipitously, as it happens for a lot of people who kind of fall into creative industries. Basically, I got robbed. It was actually in New Zealand, and I was there on a working holiday visa after I graduated school. I went to multimedia, so I kind of had a little bit of media experience in university, but nothing as far as like marketing myself and working for myself, doing freelance stuff. And I just took a year off, went to New Zealand, and was traveling around doing videos and taking a couple pictures. And about 6 months into the year, someone broke into my car and stole my camera, batteries and everything, and even stole like my clothes and my diaries and pretty much anything that was in there. They took the change from like the coin collector thing. Like they just basically gutted me. And I was pretty crushed. It was on my birthday. So actually today is my birthday. So it was
happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks. That just kind of popped in my head. So it was on my birthday and realized I didn't have a camera for the rest of the time. And all of these people that I was going to meet and places I was going, all the beautiful places, went to Australia as well, possibly that I'd never see again. I had no way of capturing that and taking it with me back to America, back to home. So I really kind of hit home that, you know, without a camera, it changes my perspective in the way I look at things and the way my memories are created. So I said to myself, you know, when I come back, my first paycheck, I'll buy a camera. And that was the camera I used up until a few years ago when I updated. But I just started taking pictures and basically at that point, I realized the power of photography in my life and kind of put me on that path to doing freelance naturally. And then now I try to do that for other people.
And if someone is interested in it, let's say they do photography, they're pretty good at it, and they're thinking, all right, well, you know, I'd like to do some freelance photography, whether it's full-time like you or whether it's just something on the side. How can they get into that? Like, how were you able to then get paying gigs?
Well, it's kind of a couple folds, a couple different things going on. One thing is, you know, always taking pictures. You're always out putting yourself out there taking pictures. That way, A, you have a portfolio that you can use to show people. B, if you're posting it online and showing people, the ones who are interested in buying it or are in the industry of buying it, say a magazine or websites or books or publishers or whoever, they see that and realize who you are and what you do and your talent. And another thing is the marketing, like understanding your value and your talent and monetizing off of that and using that to kind of as momentum to keep going into the future. So those are a couple of things that if someone's thinking about what are the practicalities of taking pictures and making money with it, you kind of have to think in both ways as a creative and also as like a data cruncher, someone who looks at statistics and looks at things that marketing-wise, business-wise, because it is a business. In the end, it's a business of taking pictures for other people. And it's a lot of fun in a lot of aspects, but a lot of aspects aren't very fun about it. And they're just like with any job, it's work. People pay you to do a job. Sometimes it's not as fun, but usually on the website and the blog, you get to see just the fun stuff.
Of course, of course. And for you then, one of the questions I have is, what is some of the toughest parts about freelancing? And then building on that, the other part that I wanted to ask you is, once you do get a gig, does it help? Like, do things kind of snowball then because you start meeting people? Hey, he's really good at this. And then they, you know, kind of word of mouth, the stuff spread pretty easily?
Yes and no. It all depends on where you're at and sometimes luck, and sometimes, you know, if you're working really hard and someone sees you, you're putting out a lot of work, then they'll just be drawn to you to give you work. So that sort of works out that way. One of the challenges, I'd say, is finding your niche, like finding your voice or your area as a photographer, just like in writing and painting and any other sort of art form. You kind of have to find where you fit in your voice of what you want to say. And that's a lot of power. Once you can get a hold of it, kind of wrangle that in. And so as a freelance photographer specifically, so you need to specialize in something, usually something that you're interested in. It helps because if you're interested in racing, there's a lot of freelance photographers out there that, you know, go and shoot NASCAR and go and shoot Formula One. And they sell those images to people who are interested in that and to companies that need those images. I shoot for Ironman. I shoot triathlons here in Denver and in Boulder. And I even shot one in Puerto Rico this last year, and I run marathons. I'm active in that. So I really enjoy that atmosphere. I really enjoy the athletes and taking pictures. I love being out there in the hot, sweltering sun on the side of a road, taking pictures of people, because that's what takes me out there. It's that passion. You got to find something, specialize in an area you're passionate about. And then the second step is to bring in the buyers, bring in people who are interested in those photos, any industry, any media industry. But even like, you know, selling them as stock or selling them as to the individual person or whatever it is, there's a million ways to make money. It's just the difficult part is making those connections and making those connections well. You know, honestly, sometimes it takes working for free, even though I don't recommend it. But if you're just starting out and you're just getting your feet under you, that may be it. But that's not a business model.
Right.
Don't keep doing that. But yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, it's kind of that balance between, okay, I want to get my foot in the door, so what's a good opportunity versus, you know, you have to make money off it. You know, if you're a good photographer, the value is there for people, so you don't want to sell yourself short there.
Right, right. And the way I looked at it, if I was entering into a market, I would try to get my foot in the door, like you said, and then I would bring business cards. I would meet people and try to make conversations and let them know that, hey, this is what I'm doing here, this is what I'm doing. And I could do this for you and your company. And that's how I get into a lot of new industries is that I just kind of, there was one here in Colorado, it was an award show for entrepreneurs and young business people. And I offered to do it for free for a ticket to get in. There was a good ticket price to get in. So I did it to get in. And the next year, the company that ran it paid me to shoot it. And I also am shooting for the magazine that helped with the award show. And I shot a couple cover photos for them. And I shoot for them every month. They're a client that I shoot for every single month. And that all came from just one opportunity where I just said, hey, I'll come in. I'll take a couple photos for free and not charge you. But this is what I'm going to get out of it. And in that circumstance, it does. And it doesn't happen every time. But there's always doors that could be opened. And that's sort of a thing with freelancing. You kind of have to, after you do it after a while, you understand which doors there actually have something on the other side. So you kind of peek in and kind of check it out. And that's basically, you know, a lot of it, how it works.
Very cool. Yeah. And that's some great advice. I think you have to look at the long game as well. You don't want to sell yourself short, but what opportunities are going to open from that? And then, you know, at every opportunity that you get, constantly be, you know, promoting yourself. People don't want to hear promoting yourself. They think it's, you know, salesy, skeevy, whatever, but it's really just saying, here's what I do. You have an awesome portfolio online now. So you could say, here's what I do. Go check it out. And anyone who does, if they're interested in that kind of stuff, is going to be able to see the value that you bring to them as a magazine or a medium or anything like that. So very cool.
Right. And definitely if you have a passion for that industry or that type of photos, that you won't have to sell yourself because your passion just kind of sells yourself for you. And people see that, people recognize that, and they respect it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not a grimy thing at all.
For sure. And I constantly get asked how to take better travel pictures. And while I certainly find myself getting better over time, you're the expert, you're the professional, you've been nice enough to come up with a list of 8 tips that can really help anyone. So let's just jump right into it, because there's a lot of people out there who want to take better travel photos. We'll start with the most basic and we'll kind of just build on that. What's your first tip for someone saying, all right, I'm new to this, I want to get good travel photos, I really have no idea what to do?
All right, so the first one is very basic. It's pretty much for someone who just bought a camera or is looking to buy a camera and is kind of tinkering around with, you know, different aspects of megapixels or lenses or things like that, different brands. The first tip I would say is don't worry about any of that. That doesn't matter. That never got anyone a good picture, is worrying about megapixels, worrying about post-processing or RAW versus JPEG, anything like that. That's just holding you down from going out and taking pictures. So any of those apprehensions or any of those fears of, am I going to make a wrong decision? Am I going to waste money? Just throw those out the window, because it doesn't matter when you're first starting out. Just get out the door and start taking pictures. And if you want to do travel photography, get out the door and start taking pictures when you travel.
So then after someone decides then, all right, I'm going to get out there, I'm going to start taking pictures, what are some other things they can do to get better shots?
All right, so the second one is sort of related to the first one. The first one was don't worry about megapixels or anything like that, post-processing. The second one but obviously you're going to have to learn to deal with that. So in regards to RAW and JPEG, post-processing, understanding your camera and settings like that, once you get out there and start taking pictures and getting creative and getting in circumstances where you're going to have to change things up, start educating yourself. The most important thing is having feet under you, and then you can start walking one step at a time. So, you know, there's advantages to RAW and there's advantages to JPEG. There's advantages to Photoshop and Lightroom and all the other free applications that are out there. So once you get your feet under you, you can start learning those processes.
Yeah.
So that would be 2.
All right. Let's keep going then. Great stuff. What's number 3?
Number 3 is a more advanced tip, I would say. Someone who's probably looking to push their cameras to a little farther. That would be understanding the histogram. So the histogram is a graph basically in your camera, and it reads the light in your image. So from your shadows to your brightness. While you're shooting, what I do is just as I'm reviewing it, I just put that on when you hit the info button. And it comes up with every image that I review. And I can see, if I'm in bright light, I can see if the brightness is getting clipped. If it's getting too bright, I can start dialing my camera down. Or if it's too dark, if I'm shooting inside or in a cave or something, then I can adjust. So it's sort of like adjustments on the fly, so you know that you're getting the correct exposure in regards to brightness and darkness. And so that you're not kicking yourself when you get back and everything's too dark.
Right.
And you can't fix it.
Right. That kind of leads me to a question. I don't know if this is going to be another tip. If it is, just run with it. But is there a time of day that's best for shooting? Let's say we're out, we're traveling, you know, okay, I'm in Rome and, you know, I really want to get an awesome picture of the Colosseum. Are there times that you would suggest, hey, here's when you can go out to get the best pictures based on the natural light and stuff?
Well, in regards to travel photography, it would be the time when the tourists aren't there.
Right.
So if that's super early in the morning, there's a rule, you know, the golden hour is, you know, the hour of the sunrise and an hour at dusk. But there's also times after that, and it's called the blue hour. That's the hour before the golden hour and an hour after the sunset. So those would probably be the times I would recommend going out. That's like if the sun rises at, say, like 6 o'clock, go out at 4:30. I know it sucks, but you will get amazing images because there won't be any other tourists around. There will be little traffic to get to where you're going, and the light will just be coming over the edge of the horizon. So it'll be nice, soft light, and then you'll get the whole golden hour to do whatever you want with. And same thing for the night too, which is a little more easier to do, but there'll be more people naturally. So it just kind of depends on what you want to get from your images. But the main thing is to plan ahead. Those are the two typical best times of day.
Very cool. And then I know you have some tips for travel photography kind of specifically. What are some of those?
That would be the next one. So good timing. This one would be learn to be an active observer. And what I mean by active observer is to not only watch what's going on, but to listen, to be an active listener. So one person I could point to that does this brilliantly, and I really respect his work, is Brendan Stranton of Humans of New York. He goes to the city that is notorious for, you know, having an attitude. People are in a hurry. People don't want to talk to you. They're not interested. And he's built his whole career off of just talking to people and listening to them. And there's interesting people everywhere. And all he does is just talk to them, learn something about them, have them open up. And then he takes their portrait. And everyone around the world relates to that because that's the power of photography. He's got a very good talent at that. He's just innately gets people to open up. And I think that's fantastic. He's brilliant at that.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, the old idiom is true. You know, a picture's worth 1,000 words. I think there's a lot you can learn from a picture that goes more than just, okay, I'm looking at this. I'm seeing what's in it, but you're feeling what's behind it. How have you been able, you know, with photography to kind of put those feelings behind pictures? Is there a mindset that people should have when they photograph certain places? You know, should they be looking for certain things?
You know, there's a couple of things to remember as far as finding an interesting photo, you know, having a different perspective. Like when I walk into, let's say, a bazaar, I'm thinking like a bazaar in Istanbul or somewhere, I'm thinking, what would it look like looking down on this situation? You know, there's a saying that says, get elevated. Always, you know, get higher and look down at a situation so you kind of can see what's going on. There could be other opportunities to shoot that you didn't notice before, or it could just be the whole situation unfolding that brings another element to the image and makes it a little more interesting. That could happen in reverse as well. Get down on the ground, shoot up, you know. Always be thinking of situations where you can change perspective, because then that the viewer sees something in a new way. And it could be something they've seen 1,000 times, but if you give a little different perspective, a little different detail, then that brings a whole nother emotion to it. It brings a whole nother idea to it. So that would be another thing. Another thing that could bring a little humanity to a photo or to a portrait is focus on the eyes. That's something that people can look into and they really relate to in another human being. And even with animals as well, you know, you focus on the eyes, it gives an element that it's alive, that it's something that's moving. And with a photo, you're capturing it in a moment. So we can understand that. We understand that, you know, something's alive, it's moving. Yeah, that really gives it a human element, a human touch.
Yeah. And not to put you on the spot too much here, but with the perspective thing, is there any time that you can think of where, you know, you might have been photographing something from a certain perspective, you change your perspective, and all of a sudden, boom, you wound up with this amazing photograph or this amazing opportunity to photograph something?
Oh, sure. One that comes to mind just recently, here in Denver where I live, they're doing a lot of construction downtown. I've been taking pictures with a construction site. They're building a high-rise in downtown. And so they have a crane that's at the very, very top of this building. And I got to go up there one night and take pictures of the city. And we were at the very, very top of this crane, over 300 feet above the ground. And this was a new building that's going up. So no one's had this perspective of this city that's been photographed so many times. But I just, you know, kind of lucky enough, but sort of not, got the opportunity to go up there and take pictures that in a space where no one in a city of millions of people has ever gotten to see that perspective before. And it was at the end of an arm of a crane, 300 feet above the ground, dangling there above the hook. So it's those sort of things that kind of happen that, you know, if you've done it once, you kind of understand, you kind of think about that again. So yeah, that's one. Another one was at a music festival, and they're really strict with the main artists because obviously they don't want people in there where they shouldn't be. I had a pass, media pass, to go and shoot, and they were kicking everybody out for the certain artist. It was Willie Nelson, and he has this big tour bus. They kicked everybody out of the backstage, including me, but I, instead of walking out, I just got up underneath one of the scaffolding. So I just crawled down, sat in the mud and grass, and just sort of waited there. And he came out walking behind the stage and he was turning to go back on. And I said, "Hey, Willie, good luck." And he turned at me and smiled. And I, right then I just clicked the picture. And that was like a backstage moment, you know, where everyone else left. And I just like, well, why not just go lay down, sit down on the ground. I'm not bothering anyone. And if they tell me to leave, I'll leave and be respectful. But no one said anything. I wasn't an issue. And so that's how that picture turned out.
Now, how were you able to get up on the crane? Do you have like tips and tricks for people like, all right, this is a cool experience, but how am I going to get up there? Have you been able to talk your way into things? You know, when you have a camera, do they give you more leeway? How's that work?
Well, with the crane, they're a little more strict with that.
I know. They don't want everyone just hanging on the end of a crane, right?
Right. I don't recommend climbing up 300 feet in the middle of the night like those people do in Russia or whatever. They climb the buildings and hang off the edge. I don't recommend that. You might end up, you know, a couple nights in jail. But I knew the manager of the construction site. It was just through networks. And he knew I did photography. And one night we were out having drinks or something. And he was like, why don't you come down and we'll arrange to get you up there. And so I've gone up there twice with that. But usually when I don't have a connection or the credentials, those are the two things that really help. Just being really nice to people helps. Smiling, especially in a country where you don't know the language, like look them in the eye, be respectful and just smile. And another thing, like when I go out, like in Croatia was one where they had this big ceremony in the middle of Split. And all the other newspaper photographers were there. This is what happened in Spain as well. All the other newspaper photographers were there. And I didn't know Spanish and I didn't know Croatian, but I just stand in the middle of them like I know what I'm doing and I'm supposed to be there. And they walk into the church, they walk into the ceremony and everything. And I just kind of walk with them and no one really, I'm not bothering anyone. I'm not trying to like get in the face of, you know, the subject or whatever. I'm just sort of going along. Whatever pictures I can get are great because if I'm not respectful in that situation, I'll get no pictures. So I kind of hang out in the back, kind of be cool and kind of go with the flow. And, you know, sometimes photographers, the other people there, media people there know I'm just like a guy there. I'm not supposed to actually be there, but they don't care because I'm not really hurting anything. So,
right. So kind of, you know, shoot the pictures, be respectful, ask permission later if necessary. But yeah, I think that's pretty cool. If you're not harming anyone and you're there with a genuine attitude, and I think people can sense a good naturedness about others. Usually you can get, this is with travel in general or anything. You can get into places, you can have experiences that other people wouldn't because you're opening yourself up to that kind of stuff.
Right. That honesty, integrity is something that'll give you a long ways in photography and traveling, really with anything in life. It's just good to remember that with other people because they will treat you with honesty and respect as well and in reverse. So,
right. Now, are there a few other tips that you have that we haven't gotten to yet?
Yeah, a specific one I learned from shooting sports, which would be applicable shooting street photography or doing travel photography. There's a setting on a camera that you can set the focus metering at either one shot at a time, or it's called AI Servo, which is in Canon. That's what I have. Is it called AI Servo? Which means that it's continually focusing. It's really important in sports because the subjects are always moving and you want to just kind of keep it focused at all times. AI Servo does that. So when you're walking down the street and you don't know what's going to happen, you're kind of shooting, let's say, a ceremony in Croatia, and you don't know if someone's going to be coming off the side or if they're going to be shooting fireworks at the end or whatever, like you always want to be ready one step ahead. So AI Servo is a setting on the camera where you're always going to be in focus, even if things are moving fast, especially if things are moving fast. So that would be a suggestion, I guess, for that.
Yeah. Is there any reason for people who have that setting on the camera? Is there any reason for people not to use that?
Yeah. If you're shooting a landscape, for example, of a sunset, you don't necessarily need that because the objects aren't really moving. Any situation where you know it's going to be pretty much set what objects are going to be, then you don't really need it. It's kind of overkill. But definitely if you're in a situation walking down the street or, you know, on a bus or something, that helps a lot.
All right. I'm sure you have a few more tips there. Why don't we get into them?
One more would be find inspiration from others outside photography. So, you know, in the travel world, for me, I love entrepreneurs. I shoot for Entrepreneur Magazine and I meet business CEOs and founders almost every day. And that's super inspiring to see people so passionate about an idea and working so hard to make it alive in the world. And if you meet people like that and surround yourself with people like that, you'll want to do that yourself. people that I do follow for photography, I follow people who are out doing expeditions and things like that. And I love that your guests, Alistair, a couple podcasts ago, but man, I didn't know about him until you were interviewing him. And then just seeing the stories he had, he's such an inspirational person. And you have a lot of people like that that are on, and I'm sure you would agree, but just reading their stories and seeing their struggles and things that they're going through and their passion out on display, it really gets something at you to keep going and keep you motivated and keep that momentum going.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. And that's one of the reasons for me, you know, photography hasn't always been a love of mine, but when I'm traveling, I feel so much more alive to be taking those photos because I'm so inspired by the stuff around me. You know, you're seeing stuff for the first time. And I think a lot of times, I think it's cool what you do in Denver because you've been living there for so long, yet you're still finding these nooks and crannies, these hidden parts, you know, and I think that's one of the real gifts of good photographers is finding the stuff amidst the mundane. And, you know, for me, when I'm traveling, if I haven't been somewhere, of course, it's like snap, 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 1,000 things, you haven't seen it. But I think being able to find that even amongst things, like you said, the people of New York or you being in Denver, you've seen it 1,000 times, but you change your perspective. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's sort of like having a childlike mentality of like walking into a place like it's new, not knowing what you're going to see or expecting something to happen. Anything could happen at any point in any day. So every time I take the train and go downtown, it's sort of like a mini adventure because I'm like, who am I going to see or run into? And now I have my camera. So, and you always have your camera with you with your iPhone, your Android or whatever, smartphone. And so always be looking for things like that. It kind of pushes you to have that sort of mindset.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, I've gotten better because I've done more, but the more you do, the more you're figuring out what works and what doesn't work, especially with cameras, right? Because there's so many settings. I just put it on auto almost all the time and shoot, but there's so many things that you can figure out.
Sure, and for an amateur, someone who's not wanting to sell photos, if they're just a hobbyist, that's completely fine to put it on auto. I mean, your camera's smart. They're really smart these days. And it just takes an element out of thinking through things that you don't necessarily need. Because if you're a pro, like that's the difference between a pro and an amateur is the pro understands and does all that, but that doesn't get in their way of the process of being creative. And for most people, I think it does. And for example, my dad, he just bought a couple of years ago, he bought a DSLR, and I'm trying to teach him all of these things that I know. And I'm like, yeah, this is great. You can do HDR. You can drag the shutter. And he just kind of looking at me with a blank stare, like, what are you talking about? And I'm not really a teacher, so it's hard for me to like to explain things in a manner that's easily absorbed. But I just thought that was getting in his way of taking pictures of the things that he really wanted to take pictures of. And at the end, I was just like, you know what, just put whatever lens you want on there. I just put it on auto and just go out and shoot and just have fun.
Right.
And he did. I mean, he had a great time with it. So.
Yeah. And I think that's cool because then you come back with a picture and you say, hey, this was cool, but the background is a little blurred, or I wanted the background blurred and it's not. And then you can ask the specific questions of, okay, if I wanted this specific shot to be better, what would I have done? But you've already gone out and taken the picture, right? And I think that your first tip is so key to not get lost, especially in photography with all the minutiae, because there is so much to get out and do it, bring them home, look at them and say, all right, how could I do this better? And then you can go searching for the answers of how you can do certain things on a camera.
Right. I mean, in some instances, you would never even have those photos because you're not in the mindset of stepping up and taking the pictures. You're worrying about, oh, should I be on aperture priority or shutter priority or whatever? You just go up and do it. And that's the biggest thing in photography is just going and doing it.
Yep, that's where I am right now. I just go and shoot. And every once in a while, I ask Heather, who's now taught herself some, and I'm like, hey, why didn't this work out, right? Oh, you got to change the speed or this or that. You know, she tells me all this stuff. But yeah, you don't want to get in your own way.
Right, exactly. And you can't. It's easy.
Yeah. Are there any other tips then you have for people shooting photography?
Yeah. Well, last one would be don't worry about making mistakes, like you just said. You know, if you take it back and it looks too dark or whatever, that's okay. It's not the end of the world. I mean, you may go, if you're a travel photographer, you may not get a chance to go back to that place, but mistakes are mistakes. Like, you learn from them and you move on. And that's the key thing. Another thing is to make awesome mistakes. Make mistakes that you're really putting yourself on the line, taking risks. And if you screw up and it all falls down, at least you have a good story in the end. So, and that's sort of, you know, some of my history is, you know, some of the mistakes that I've made have turned into great opportunities just because I stay positive. I always try to stay positive and keep pushing forward and finding new opportunities even after mistakes have been made. So
yeah, for sure. And you, like you mentioned before, you said, you know, that people shouldn't get worked up in what camera they're getting this or that. But if someone, like, let's go through a few of the basics, if you wouldn't mind. If someone's just looking for a regular point and shoot camera, A, is there any reason to get a point and shoot camera versus carrying around your iPhone, since everyone has iPhones and smartphones now? And B, if there is, what kind of things should people look for if they want a cheaper model camera, not a DSLR?
Well, there are cheaper model cameras, like the ones that aren't DSLRs, or like the 2/3 micro body cameras that have detachable lenses. Those are fantastic. I think Sony makes them, and Olympus, a couple other brands I can't think of right now, but those are fantastic because they're super light. They have all the practical, you know, mission critical capabilities of a DSLR, like shooting raw in high ISO, great in low light, can shoot fast as well. And then an interchangeable lenses. So you can get some little compact lenses to go with you and you're set. So I think there are a lot of great options now than there ever were for technology keeping up and really utilizing it in a non-obtrusive way. So as far as brands, I can't think of any right now, but any of the major brands, like Canon, Nikon, make good models for DSLRs. And then the second brand, you know, Olympus, Sony, they make great, those 2/3 body camera.
Okay, so 2/3 body cameras. If you want something in between, you know, your basic camera and then your DSLR, then if someone's saying, like, for example, we were talking a couple months back, or well, yeah, 4 or 5 months now, we were upgrading from, you know, hey, we have an iPhone, we have a point and shoot camera, we want to get a DSLR. If someone's looking at a DSLR because they say, hey, I'm going to be traveling a lot, I really want to up my photography game a little bit, are there certain things they should be on the lookout for? I know you said you use a Canon. Are there brands that you would recommend over others? And is there something that they should be looking at? You know, if you're a newbie like me and you have no idea really what to go for.
Sure. Like megapixel war that everyone's heard of is basically over. They're not really using that to market cameras anymore. You don't really need a high pixel camera to take sharp, clear images. And in a lot of ways, it's counterintuitive. It makes them less sharp and less clear. So anything, you know, between, like, I would say between 10 and 16 is enough. If you want to go higher, you certainly can, but that just kind of adds on to the price tag. So I would say anything between 10 and 16. So there's a lot of like 15, 14 megapixel cameras. The new iPhone's like 8 or 10 or something like that. So I would say stick with that. Try not to get sold on too much on megapixels. Your sensitivity of the sensor is probably the main thing. And different manufacturers have different ratings for it or different sort of ways to communicate it. But just know that sensitivity of the sensor is very important. A lot of it has to do with pixel density and your low light capabilities, because you'll be in situations where there won't be perfect light. You won't always be in that golden hour that we talked about before. You'll be inside, you know, a dark room, especially if you're traveling in a third world country, they don't have electricity. So what are you going to do when you're inside having an amazing dinner with your host family and you want to take a picture of it and it's completely dark? Well, pixel density and ISO sensitivity will help with that. I would look for that. Anything for ISO, you know, mine goes to around 6400. The newer models go higher than that. So anything that's 6400 and above is a great option. Or even 3200. A lot of cameras go 3200, but as far as ISO, those are some good numbers. And then as far as lenses go, I've heard a scenario, if you're going to spend money on a new camera, you put 70 to 80% towards lenses and 30 to 20% to a camera body. I did tell you that because I didn't know that percentage at the time 5 months ago. But since then, I was listening to a podcast and it really made sense of someone making that statement, because your lenses are the thing that will hardly advance much more than they do now. And I say that there'll be one tomorrow that's a brand new one. But other than, you know, the focal lengths, the 70 to 200, 16, 35, 20 to 70, those are pretty set standards for your focal lengths. Those are things that probably won't change much. But your body is a technology that's constantly changing. So that's why they say, don't put all your eggs in one basket buying a body and buy a cheap lens. Buy a nicer lens and maybe go the next level down for the body, because in 5-10 years, you'll probably be updating your body with a detachable lens and just keep the same lens.
Right. Is there lenses that you recommend? So when we went, for example, we got the, I don't even know anything. We got the standard lens, I guess. Is there?
I think you got the 50 millimeter, didn't you?
Yes. We got a 50 millimeter, and then we got a 15-30. Is that something?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So that would be like a wide angle zoom.
Okay.
Which is great for, you know, if you're traveling, you see a big building, a big open space, it kind of gives you that spaceness aspect where you can kind of see everything. Big wide sunsets that look really great on wide angles. And then the 50 that you have, that's called a prime, so there's no zooming aspect to it. Those are great because there's a lot less glass that's needed inside the lens, so you get a lot less light fall off to get to the sensor. So your 50 prime, it goes down to a lot, so your f-stop is wider, meaning more light can come in. So you can go into a situation, say like indoors, and take your zoom off, put your prime on, and you got a lot more light availability because of just by switching that lens, and that's the difference. So that's kind of what I would recommend, actually, in traveling is at least one prime, so like a 50. The Nifty 50 for the Canon is like a 1.8, and that's like maybe $120 new. You can get them all over the place for under $100. I have one as well, and it's awesome. I've used it for a cover shoot, and it's a $100 lens. I've used it to shoot a cover of magazine. And then a wide angle, so like what you have as well, there's like 15 to 35, there's 16 to 35, there's different types of them, but anything like 15, 16, 14, 10 range, those will be really nice and wide. And then if you want a telephoto as well, telephotos are great for zooming in, you know, far distances away. So three lenses.
Yeah, and you can always buy the lenses afterwards. I mean, I assume most people know that, but some might. You know, you can always buy the lenses afterwards. And the lenses should be interchangeable then between cameras, correct? Is it if it's the same brand, or is it across brands as well, or no?
It's possible to get a converter, but if you buy a converter between Nikon and Canon, there's some light loss and it's a little loss of quality. And that's for people who are making a switch that have all the, you know, lenses for a certain brand and they want to make a switch to a different body. That's sort of the give and take of photography, is like once you're in, you're kind of in. If you buy an Olympus 3/4 compact camera with interchangeable lenses, you can't use that on a Canon and vice versa. So you're kind of in with the brand, as they say, if you go in on that. But most camera brands carry a full range of lenses. So,
right. So you should be fine no matter what you go with then.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Well, awesome photography tips there. Let's jump into travel here a little bit, because travel is the kind of other side of your life that, you know, that you're passionate about and that you do a lot of with photography and with traveling. And we're always looking for ways, you know, to travel more, spend less. What are some of the ways that you found in your travels to save money?
Good question. One thing that comes to mind is it goes back to the people aspect of meeting people and being open. There are times when I was traveling solo, and I traveled from Croatia to Greece by bus, and I just met people everywhere I went, and eventually just started staying with people. People would take me out for food and things. Even though Albania itself is a very poor country, they wouldn't allow me to spend money, even though I was there as a tourist, and you know, I know that it's cheap to travel there. Just meeting people and being open and just, you know, telling people, hey, you know, I really appreciate your country, I really enjoy being here. They take a lot of pride in that. As far as my experience, they did not let me buy anything. And I walked out of there with the same amount of money that I did when I walked in 2 weeks later. And it was crazy. It was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And it was just because of the people there. So that was the way I saved money, is just being friendly to people and people being friendly back. Another thing is traveling long term. I know it's not possible for a lot of people, but you get more value out of your plane tickets if you stay longer. You get more value out of your bookings. If you can book longer, you can negotiate prices. So if you travel low and slow, that might be something. Or if you go to a place and you're like, okay, we're going to go to Rome, or we got 2 weeks vacation, we want to save as much money as possible. Once you get in Rome, I wouldn't book anything beforehand. I would wait to book until you get there. And you probably have lots of tips about that. But it's one thing that's always easier once you're there to figure it out and to find different ways of doing the things that you want to do. And maybe you won't see every part of Italy, but you'll really appreciate the parts that you do see. So
yeah, for sure. I doing stuff on the ground, you know, train tickets nowadays and plane tickets, you can get better price if you book in advance. But other things, you know, like when you get, like you said, you get to Rome, maybe you book a day or two in a hotel, hostel ahead of time. You get the feeling for it. You think, okay, now I'm going to look for other places. You're not going to probably lose money doing stuff while you're there. Tours, you can usually go to a tour agency, say, hey, I want a last minute tour today or tomorrow or something like that. How can I hop on? You're probably not going to find a better price online than you would if you go and speak to people. So I think that's a really good tip. It's just being aware, you know, especially countries, you know, Italy is an example, especially countries in Asia, kind of these countries that are built on tourism. You know, everyone wants your tourist dollar, and there's so many options that they're competing for. You can really negotiate great prices to do things, you know, that if you booked online, you're going to be paying, you know, some exorbitant fee.
Right. And for example, when we went to Bali, they have an airport tax, and that's a big thing in a lot of countries where they have a taxi. You just take a taxi to the airport. We had friends that had been there before, and they said, okay, well, once you get out of the airport, just walk to the edge of the parking lot to the main road and grab a taxi. You're technically not at the airport, so you don't have to pay this exorbitant airport tax for any taxis. And of course, the taxis there, they'll jack it way up and tell you that it's a $20 airport tax or whatever, even though it's maybe like a $2 or $3 one. They'll try and times it by 10. But if you go out to the road, you know, you could haggle, you could do whatever, because there's a million other taxis going by. So If there's a tax on something, it might be a way around it.
Yeah,
especially airport taxes.
Oh, for sure. We've used that at many different airports. You know, you walk literally for half a minute and you're away from the airport taxi stand, and all of a sudden there's a bunch of guys wanting to take you at different places, and you can really haggle down your prices there. For sure. What are some of your greatest travel memories then? Places that you've gone that you said, man, I either really want to go back here, or I'd tell anyone, hey, they should get here.
We mentioned Nepal earlier. That was a really special trip for me. That was a personal project I did. It was for a childhood friend that he's Nepalese, and he started a wireless internet network out there in the Himalayas. So he started schools out there, and they're all connected through this wireless internet system that he set up. So I went out there to follow him around and to document that. There's a picture on my website. It's on the top of this mountain, and we're in between Davagiri, which is the seventh highest mountain in the world, in the Annapurna peak, which is the 10th highest mountain in the world. And we're in between them. And we're not even really in the Himalayas yet. And we're at 14,000 feet. And there's snow everywhere. And it's a night shot. And I just sat up there, and it was at night. And I almost like felt like crying, because it was like a religious experience just being there with these massive peaks all around. And, you know, it's just sort of a surreal experience being there with a childhood friend that I would have no idea that I would ever do that, go to his home country and go to be in this place. But only the decisions that I wanted to do, it brought me there. So that was sort of like an out-of-body experience that I guess you could say was one of the most amazing. Another one was a couple of years ago in Greece. I mentioned I went from Dubrovnik, Croatia, to Greece by bus. And just getting there was an adventure. But my whole purpose was to get to Athens for the elections. They were voting to whether keep Greece in the EU. So I felt like I was in Europe, and I'm a photographer, so I wanted to be there at that possible, you know, historic moment. And once I got there, you know, chaos everywhere. There's a lot of protests going on. There's all these political factions coming up. Through a contact that I had made in Albania, I had no relation to anyone I knew. It was just some guy I met. He knew a journalist in Athens. So when I got off the bus from Albania to Greece, the guy picked me up from the bus station, and he's like, okay, let's go around. So he showed me all around the different political areas. He told me all about the situation that's going on. I had no idea who this guy was. I just met him. And he took me to where one of the people that were voting, it was like at a school in the area of his district that he had to vote in. And he was a candidate to be prime minister. This was the guy in the party that wanted to get out of the EU. So the whole world's focus was on him voting that day. And I had no press credentials. I had no pass to be in there. And he just walked up. He was a journalist, but he wasn't covering it. So he kind of knew a couple people. And so he's like, okay, just go up the stairs and just go wait in that room. And I walk up and I open the door, and there's just cameras everywhere. CNN is there. MSNBC is there. Al Jazeera is there. All like the major news channels are there. And I just walk in with like a backpack and, you know, sandals and a camera, and took pictures of this guy voting. And it ended up, I went to the winner that night. It wasn't him. It was another party who ended up staying in the EU. And so I was just hanging out in another situation. I didn't know anyone. I just made friends and started talking to the MSNBC crew that were there. And eventually the prime minister-elect was coming in, and they kicked everyone out. But since I was standing there talking with the MSNBC people, I had no credentials. They knew that they could be there, so they didn't kick me out. And the people that I was talking to just kind of smiled and said, okay, well, if they're not kicking you out, it's fine. And so I got pictures from me to the new prime minister of Greece from, you know, about 10 feet away, giving his acceptance speech. And it was just because I was there, I was at the right place at the right time. And it's crazy things happen when you're out there.
That's right. That's travel. And you never know who you're going to meet and who's going to hook you up somewhere else or, you know, just show you an authentic travel experience. I think that's what we're kind of getting at here is that these experiences, you didn't know any of these three experiences were going to happen. They kind of just coalesced into these awesome, like you said, out-of-body experiences when you're in Nepal and then, you know, getting to be at the forefront of a huge political, historical decision just because you put yourself in that situation. And that's why we travel, right? Because we don't know what to expect and what's going to happen.
Right. And that wasn't an assignment. It wasn't like something that, you know, I was working for somebody or I was like wanting to sell the images or anything. It was just something that I felt like I could go and actually be a part of. And that was just the travel wanderlust in me to do it. And that and photography go hand in hand all the time.
For sure. Now let's flip it around a little bit because one of the favorite questions I like to ask people, and I know you've listened to them, so I'm of course going to ask you, travel mistakes or mishaps? Because everyone seems to think, all right, these guys are seasoned travelers. You know, everything works out. Listen to him. He just got on a bus to Greece. He's meeting the prime minister, blah, blah, blah. But reality is much different than that. Have you had any hilarious mishaps while traveling that stick out in your mind as like as strongly as these ones that we just talked about as being these epic experiences?
Well, they weren't very hilarious at the time, but, you know, through time, it kind of makes it funny. And the saying I say now, if you're going to laugh about it later, you might as well laugh about it now. And that kind of gets you through, you know, mistakes that you make on the road and stuff. But one is probably the biggest embarrassing mistake of my life, which I'll share with the entire world right now. But I was going to England. This was in 2008. I was going to England to try to work and try to live. I had some friends there that I could stay with for a little while and just start to do I was just starting to do photography and freelance seriously. So I was like, well, I want to live in Europe and London. I know the most people. They could have the contacts for me to start working and freelancing. So I had I'd contacted a bunch of different agencies, had a bunch of different meetings lined up. Granted, I didn't have any visa to work. It was going to be totally illegal. And I knew that. And I didn't have any sort of plan to get a visa. I just wanted to work and freelance. So I had a list of all these different agencies I was going to talk to in these meetings that I was going to go try to get. So on a flight there, I took some sleeping pills and I didn't really read the dosage amount and sort of overdosed on the sleeping pills. I get off the plane once there and we're going through customs and everything. And if you've been to Heathrow, you know that their customs agents are like bulldogs. They're very aggressive. This has happened to me multiple times, even being back and sober in the right minds, but I was not in the right mind. So I kind of divulged a little too much information and went under interrogation in Heathrow. And they got my bags and looked through my bags and saw that I was going to start working as a photographer. And they're like, you know, you can't do this, right? And I was like, well, yeah, I knew that, but I just wanted to come here and to travel. And they're like, well, we don't really believe you because you have all these agencies written down. So we can't let you into our country. They held my passport for 24 hours and they said, you're free to go into the, they felt sorry for me. They said, you could go in and see your friends and tell them your situation. We're holding your passport and tomorrow we have a flight booked for you back home. And so the next day I had to get back on a plane and go right back to Chicago. And I told everyone I was going, I told like, you know, my family, what I was doing, I was going to be living in London and my friends all knew that. And my friends that were in London were confused. They're like, why did you tell them that you were going to work? And I was like, well, I didn't really mean to. It just kind of came out. I was so groggy from the pills. And so that's a really embarrassing story. But the silver lining is when I came back to Chicago, I was hanging out and I had to reapply for a visitor's visa and send in letters to go back to London, which I eventually did a couple months later. And I eventually got work there. I worked for a magazine. So Take that, Grace.
You'll show them, right?
But yeah. In the end, I met a guy who ran a festival, and it was that's how I got into shooting music festivals. He just asked me if I wanted to go shoot at Bonnaroo, which is a big music festival in Tennessee. And within a week, literally a week of one of the worst and most embarrassing situations in my life and very expensive, I was at Bonnaroo shooting Metallica and Pearl Jam on stage. And it was all because of a mistake that I had made, and I was feeling very depressed and very down about it. I met a guy, told him my story, and we kind of connected, and he was like, hey, would you be interested in going and taking pictures here? So,
hey, you're sticking around, right? You can't get into other countries.
You're not going anywhere.
That's awesome. I think that's incredible, too. Not just the story, all right, moral, don't overdose on sleeping pills, but also the silver lining and how that turned into a positive for you. And I think the idea that you said, you know, if you're going to laugh about it later, you might as well laugh about it now. I think that's an awesome motto to live by. What do you have then in the pipeline that people should be looking out for, either personally, where you're going to be going, or professionally? Do you have any cool things coming up?
Yeah, professionally, I'm starting to get into more of a yoga. So I'm building a yoga portfolio, and there's a music festival coming up that I'll be shooting, building my yoga portfolio. That's sort of like Humans of New York, where you talk to people, you get them to open up a little bit about their life. And what I want to do at this festival is have people do different poses that are meaningful for their life. So that's something that I'm working on as a portfolio piece. As far as travel goes, there's nothing in mind yet, but we kind of travel by the seat of our pants. And honestly, like being in Colorado, being in Denver, being in the Rocky Mountains, this is the time to be here. And so we don't really want to travel. We want to travel within the U.S. because we love the summer. We love being warm. We love the mountains. We love hiking and being out in the wilderness. So this is where we'll be. We'll be traveling around here. Come winter, we'll probably be traveling somewhere warm and tropical where there's a nice beach to go to. And so...
Yeah. I'm with you, man. I'm with you. We'll be out in Colorado in August, so we'll meet up then.
Sure.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, sharing these amazing photography tips and just your travel mentality and the way that you're looking at life. That's really, really inspiring. You've just helped tens of thousands of amateur travel photographers make their pictures look much, much better. Before I let you go, can you remind people how they can come connect with you?
Yeah, my website, it's michaelnifflerphotography.com. I do Twitter and I'm on Facebook as well, so... If you have a question or anything, just ask me. I answer a lot of questions. So, and if some of them are good enough, I'll put them on my blog and actually do something about it. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Mike. Thanks again for coming on. Best of luck. I can't wait to see what you're shooting next.
Thanks, Trav. Yeah, I can't wait to see who you're interviewing next.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Guys, we've given you some great tips here on how to shoot better photos, but I know there are still some questions out there you may have that haven't been answered. And Michael has personally told me that he'd love to answer those questions. So if you do have questions, even the most basic ones, you can go to extrapackofpeanuts.com/pods and find the show notes for this episode, number 48. Just leave a comment on those show notes and Michael will be happy to answer them, and we'd love to hear from you. If you want to check out some of the awesome work Michael has done, head on over to his site. It's michaelnefflerphotography.com. That's N-Y-F-F-E-L-E-R photography.com. If you can't remember how to spell that, we've got it linked in the show notes as well. Lastly, we're looking for enough reviews on iTunes to catch Tim Ferriss, and we need your help. If you take 1 minute to go leave us a review on iTunes, I really appreciate it. If you don't know how to leave a review on iTunes, don't worry. We've got you covered. Head on over, once again, extrapackofpeanuts.com/pods, P-O-D-S. Check out our super short video tutorial. Thanks for all the love, everyone. You guys rock. Until next week, happy free travels.